everybody. Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols here with another Tactical Fitness Report. And today is a fun one. I think this is a real needed one because there's a whole lot of new information that's out there. And we're going to try to dive into the most common injuries that we are seeing and people are asking us and seeing some of our students have to deal with, all come from a variety of activities, but they all hit us from the feet and the ankles, the shins to the knees, right? I mean, feet and ankles are kind of one element together, but there's two things that we can talk about on that. We can talk about foot balance and muscles and shoe wear, you know, footwear that's involved with that, ankle mobility. We can talk about the skin of blister care. You know, there's so many different ways that we can kind of wrap our heads around this one. And then a lot of times that ankle mobility leads to shin splints. And then, you know, any running volume that you're doing, usually out of an illogical progression, can bring on a variety of knee injuries, from IT band, patellofemoral syndrome, to patella tendonitis. You know, so you wrap around the whole round the knee all the way down to the feet in this one. So I think from the knees down, Jeff, let's kind of break it down a little bit and maybe start from the feet up, because I think that's what I see out there between the Foot Collective and some of the stuff that they're doing. And then you got the knees over toes guy, you know, and some of the running methodologies that are being, you know, introduced to people on a broader level that can be very useful.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the genesis of this, is like you and I over the last kind of 18 months have kind of seen, there seems to be an upswing of relevant value in taking care of our feet really specifically, that leads into the ankles and knees and then eventually the hips. But like, so just like, there's two points I always like to make for our athletes is, number one, the bottom of your feet, the skin, specifically the nerve endings and the capillaries. There are more nerve endings in the bottom of your feet than anywhere else on your human body, except for your genitals, right? So that's like, wow, like that makes sense that our reproductive organs would be full of sensory organs, sensory nerves. Well, we're upright human beings. Like, it kind of really goes, wow, it makes a lot of sense that we have that much tactile feel on the bottom of our feet. And then moreover, right, we have 206 bones in the human body, right? 208, depending on how you're counting the coccyx or whatever. Over a quarter of them are in your feet, right? Over half of them, really, like just 26 bones in one foot, not counting your ankle, right? You got another 9 to 11 bones there. So like, if you're looking at a vast majority of nerve endings and bones, that's really, really important if you really look at the muscle skeletal system. And so from that point, you go like, look at sport. Like, we're all generating force through our hips, through our knees, ankles, and feet. And it's like, so we're looking at ground force management. We're looking at like ground force production. We're looking at all these sort of things that were all these nerve endings, all these blood vessels, and all these bones. We've got to work together and keep us upright, ambulatory, mobile, healthy, all those sort of things. So I guess that's where I look at it and I go, all these years, I know my feet are important, but I never really put it into that sort of that numerical value. It makes a lot of sense to me rationally. So that's where a lot of this is coming from, is guys like Stu is saying, we've trained a lot of guys. A lot of guys have some sort of chronic stuff that shows up. We tend to look, first thing I'm going to do is look at the ground, is what is the foot doing when it runs into the ground, whether it's you're running, or what's the foot and ankle doing when we're swimming? And then moreover, how does your foot and ankle feel after you do these things? Right. And what are you doing to, you guys should be doing a comparison. It's like, if it's real hot, you want to weigh yourself, you go work out and see how much water you've lost. Like, if you've had chronic ankle foot stuff, what you should be doing is, once you're done working out or whatever, you should be doing a comparison. You should be like, okay, I've lost a lot of mobility during my run. Why is that happening, and how do I get it back? And that's where we talk resistance training, rucking and binning and stuff. But that's kind of my two cents on the idea is why we're doing this, which is real, real chronic.
Yeah, I would say, you know, some of the neat things I've seen, you know, with, you know, just through social media and then on their corresponding websites is, you know, the development of newer types of shoes that are allowing for the spread of the foot. You know, like when you and I were growing up playing sports, you know, wearing cleats, you know, some of those cleats are, you know, come around and almost have a front tip to them, you know, and your foot was all botched up like that versus, you know, spread out. You know, so I have found, you know, some new shoes. I usually wear the Zero shoes. You ever seen those? I mean, yeah, I pronounce them zeros. They're X-E-R-O.
X-E-R-O.
Zero shoes. I've really liked those. I have felt a big difference in my feet in those. I tend not to run on pavement in those. Just being a 200-pound runner, you know, that and pavement is not fun. So I use them for trail running. I'll run on the track with them, on turf, on the beach. You know, they're great for, you know, that. At least for me.
Same as you, Stu. I don't know that I'll ever even try or think it's a good idea for my body weight to do that. Like that same idea. That's been my limitation over the last couple of years. Is trail running is great. Lifting's been great. Running around on the baseball field, like shagging balls with my son or whatever, has been great. But as soon as I get onto concrete or asphalt and try to move, man.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If you're doing a running cycle, that's something I tell my guys too. Like we're in the end of our running cycle in the summer. And we do run on this trail that is a paved bike path. However, to the left and the right of that trail is nothing but grass. And it's a nice flat grass area. So I tell my guys that I know are going to have running issues because they're fairly new to running and this progression, you know, I have to like pull back on them because I know if I push too hard, they're probably going to do too much and start having some of those running pains. As I say, spend most of your time on the grass, you know, where you can run on that grass. And I would say probably 75% of our runs now are probably on a little bit softer surface. There may be a day or two during the week where, you know, we're running this paved bridge to get to another area of our training area. But for most part, we're trying to run on a little bit softer surface for those who are susceptible to these types of foot, shin, and knee injuries. For those that aren't, you know, they can just, you know, a little lighter runner, not, you know, used to running a lot, you know, probably not going to have the same type of issues. But, you know, when you're dealing with a group and a wide variety of athletic histories, you know, you have to really watch out when you're tasking, you know, people to run and do these elements or do these events that, you know, cause these type of injuries, because swimmers will see them, you know, bigger guys will see these kinds of injuries, new runners will see them, you know, and you have to have a very logical progression when you start trying to get better at running.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's like anything else. Like, I think that like, that's probably the most poignant thing that we can really offer here is that what we're talking, we got to, context is key. And it's just worth saying, guys, what we're talking about is some of the most difficult training in the world. This should take you a while to prepare for it. Right. And that's the thing is, what we're talking about is running progression. The best thing that we can offer you guys is smart training advice. And in terms of running, because that typically is it tends to be where a lot of people will start because it doesn't take a lot to just go start running, right? So it makes sense that like running and these chronic issues tend to be the most common, right? And they happen to be the most frequent because people start off running the most. Okay. So all I want to do is offer this. Like, we're all going to agree that that's a very common thing. And it's not a wrong thing to do to start off just running. But if that's what you're going to do, if that's like your first, like, well, before I get into weight training and calisthenics, like I'm going to get running. Awesome. Make that decision. But if you're going to make that decision, what you need to do is what's best for you, is don't beat yourself up, right? It's not about running more and more every single day. Running is merely about what you can acclimate to. If you are experiencing you know, 3-4 days in a row of where you're running is like, it's really feels almost detrimental. Like yeah. the discomfort is increasing. You feel like it's harder to catch your breath, right? You could see these really, like 4 or 5 days in, you could see these really abrupt performance diminishing happen because like you're new to it, right? You don't want to start off running a lot of chronic work, right? And that's what we're going to, I guess my point is like, well, if running's my goal and all I'm doing is running kind of to start, well, what are my other options? The other option is definitely rucking. Those are very complimentary for a beginner. Doing a ruck, you know, no more than 30 pounds or so. And, you know, do like, let's say you're going to Buds, right? A really good starting point for aerobic base is like, because your tested third phase time is going to be around 29 minutes. What if you put 25-pound ruck on and just did a nice, aggressive, brisk 29-minute ruck march? Now you're saying, well, yep, I can put out for 29 minutes at least. I got that to start with, right? I've got a little bit of additional weight that I can manage and get my leg strength up before I decide to put on all that mileage. Like that's a complimentary option, you know, like great definitely idea. Run, but use the ruck as a, basically it's like an active recovery day or an active resistance day to improve your running strength. So yeah. Think about that, guys, too, as an early and often option with running.
That's a good point because you need two things, you know, much like swimming, you need technique and you need conditioning. You know, with running, you need impact force durability and conditioning, right? Yep. Which that you can put technique in there too, you know, yeah. obviously of the way you're running. But let's do this, Jeff. Let's start off at the feet and talk about some ways to just take care of the foot, whether that is strengthen the foot, post running activities of the foot. And, you know, we don't necessarily have to get into footwear today, but, no. you know, just some of the things that I personally like to do, two things with the foot. I like to do a tennis ball or lacrosse ball massage of the bottom of my feet before and after running. Very helpful. And then I also like to do some balancing drills throughout the day with my feet. And one of the best things I have done in a while is just stand on one foot and close my eyes, and you will feel so many muscles firing at that very moment from your foot yep. all the way up to your shin, you know, all yep. the balancing muscles up there. And that is just a really good way to get blood flow to those regions that need typical healing post running.
Yep. Yeah. Something real similar. And like, you know, the Arex pads, those foam Arex pads.
Oh yeah.
Or even use a Bosu ball.
Yep.
But we're, cause a lot of guys figure, you got to figure, like we talked about bones and muscles and everything on our feet. Right. So when you work out, like, let's say you're, I don't know, you've had a sore elbow and you throw on an elbow sleeve and you work out. Well, when you get done working out, what do? You take the elbow sleeve off. Right. So that's one of the big things with people with train is your feet, especially if you're lifting weights in running shoes, you're at a detriment. Mm. If you're lifting weights in like Vans or Chuck Taylors, your toes are boxed in, you're at a huge disadvantage. From what? Like, you guys understand like binding feet, right? Your feet are basically getting bound by the tightness of those shoes. And if you don't remove the bind from your footwear, from your feet, right? When your muscles they're tight from working out, all your tendons are in flex, they're pumped, right? And you keep your foot bound up in that tight sock or that tight foot, it will then relax in this position. It'll calcify. And that's why you get bunions and, you know, hammer toes and all these calluses and all these overlapping of the feet and the toes, they rub, right? So what you want to do is after the activity that bite tightens that foot up because it needed to for activity, right? We're not saying the foot's not going to tighten up. We're saying it does tighten up post-training, right? It gets the tendons and ligaments blood flowed. So that's what you're seeing us do is like gets his foot out, gets his shoe off and starts manually moving and manipulating the muscle skeletal system to do two things. Help downregulate the nervous system because then you reposition the bones back where they should be. when the bones are where they should be, your nerve impulse to stay and heal is more prominent. So we take the shoes off, the feet take a neutral position, right? And then they can heal in that neutral position, better blood flow, all that good stuff. And so if you do that enough, now you're creating a pattern of recovery after training or after you get done finning. Manipulate your feet when you're done finning, the same thing happens, okay? So that's what we say, you want to stretch after you get done working out. More than anything, you want to manipulate your bones of your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's do this. So we got the bones, feet. Do you do any particular foot strengthening exercises that you've recommended or seen recently?
You mentioned you did a balance, right? One foot. What we'll do is same thing, or I'll just walk in place on one of those AirX pads, right? Or you put the AirX pad right at the bottom of your first step on a stairwell, and it's a little step up, step down. Just keep stepping up, stepping down into the saw. And then you turn around and you step down backwards into it to improve patella strength.
Nice.
So you step down into it forward and step back up. You keep stepping down and you turn around. And then you hold dumbbells. Do the same thing. Just hold 5 10-pound dumbbells. Step up, step down. Because it's the step down where you open those feet and stretch and move those feet when you step down. And then
nice.
You step up, it does the same thing. So you can put, have one or two, doesn't matter. But that's what we'll just, a lot of guys on the end of workout day, we have a bunch of AirX pads right at the end of leg day. We just have them walk in place, like farmers walk in place with dumbbells.
Barefoot. Yeah.
Barefoot. On those AirX pads. So if you don't have an AirX pad, go out into the nice big soft grass or go in the sand and really work your feet through the sand. So on Bud's, before Bud's class is up and you're out there getting you to do some run sand, the sand, take your boots and sock off and walk around in the soft sand. Also, you're going to pull in the magnesium from the sand. So we get a little more relaxation too, or get in the water up to your knees. We got even more magnesium. So again, it's all about getting the feet to be able to receive the stress every day. And that's what Stu's doing. It's just, we got to manipulate those bones, tendons, and ligaments through locomotion, through natural locomotion. And that is the beginning of the healing process.
Now that's really smart. I like that. A lot of people have problems with blisters. Do you have any, blister recommendations if people get blisters?
You bet. So what we're talking about is getting those toes to spread out, right? What we're trying to do is condition the toes to create strength laterally instead of medially where they impinge against each other. So you got to figure when you go to jump, guys, if you do it slow motion, right? If I throw my hands down when I go to jump, I lift my toes. Yeah. That toe lift is what fires the hip flexors. And that lifting the toe is what stabilizes the feet to go to extension. So when you guys lift and train and you squat, be mindful of what your toes are doing as you're moving, because they should be moving, right? Everything, right? When you're squatting, the toes aren't moving. But if we're doing an exercise in locomotion, be mindful in your warm-up just to walk and try to open your toes. That in and of itself is a great warm-up. So it's one of those things that our warm-up a lot of times includes wearing shoes that our feet are bound. So take your shoe off, warm up without your shoe on, and then we put the shoe back on because no one's broken a 100-meter world record sprint barefoot. You still really do need footwear and a lot of times to produce that force to train and then to train that force management. Barefoot is awesome, but we still need the shoe a lot of times to help protect the foot in its optimization patterning.
Yeah. And until they get rid of concrete and glass, I'm probably not going to go barefoot ever.
No. And I literally just only go barefoot. Fortunately we have a space and we have vacuums. Yeah. But you're right. Even my backyard, I run around barefoot, but that's because it's my backyard. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Probably another one that I've seen a lot, especially recently, we sent over the summer a lot of guys over to SOAS, and some of them were not used to wearing the boots and the UDT dive socks that they issue out there at Bud's.
Yep.
And so they got a lot of blisters because what are you at Bud's? You're constantly wet. You're running around, walking. You know, you're putting in a bunch of miles on your feet all day long. And you're very susceptible to blisters, right? Yep. Especially if you get issued a pair of boots the day before you start and you haven't really broke them into your feet. So I would definitely recommend having a pair of boots, whatever selection program you're going into, is have those pair of boots that you know you're going to get issued already broken in months in advance to just save you a lot of trouble.
And I would definitely, guys, I would definitely do some research. There's a bunch of companies out there that make them now, and they're not super expensive. I would buy a pair of good rubber toe spacers.
Oh, yeah.
I would most definitely be wearing those for a couple reasons. One, it's going to help condition the toes to want to stay in that position. That's going to help eliminate a lot of that chafing from the salt and sand. But also, you know, like when we get done with a day, letting our feet air out, right? And if you do have blisters, right, we don't want the toes smashed together. Those spacers are going to give you a real good option to help your feet air out at the end of the day. Because that's always my first advice. That's one thing that hasn't changed, is like at the end of Bud's, each day of training or selection, whatever it is, your priority should be get your wet stuff off, get dry feet. Like that's like, I would always pre-stage all my sweatpants and my socks dry for that day. Because as soon as I got that stuff off, I'm going to dry my feet, I'm going to get dry socks on, and I'm going to get warm. And I would say, make sure once your feet are dry, really dry, I would add those toe spacers and wear those as long as it's comfortable to the next morning or whatever.
Sandals. Yeah, form of sandal. Yeah, I don't like flip-flops. Some reason I have found that flip-flops just really tweak my calf muscles in a weird way. I don't know. It's not even a calf muscle.
You have to pull your toe in. You have to pull your toes in to hold the flip-flop, right?
Yeah, it's like the digitoris longus. Idea. You know, the digitoris muscles.
You bet, man. That's get real sore. You bet. Yeah. And so then you're looking at real, not a knee discomfort there too. So the other thing I would say is, guys, this is one thing I've changed my mind about. And no kidding, look it up. There's a new research study that came out of Germany about Birkenstocks and how the orthotic side of them aren't as good. Not because they're not good. They finally is what I've been saying for a while. If you don't have any foot issues, like your feet are spaced out perfect, wear Birkenstocks. But the problem is Birkenstocks are cork. If you have a misshaped foot and you it into cork, it will stay misshaped. So it's not Birkenstock's fault. It's our bad footwear before. So what I don't wear Birkenstocks anymore until my feet are the best shoes I have ever worn for recovery. Hands down, no question at this point. Like I have all the Zero shoes. I have the barefoot shoes. I have the Vivos. I have the Innovates. I have them all. The best shoes I have by far for recovery are my Ultras. Hmm. Those wide toe box, I really like ONs. I do. I think they're a really good wide toe running shoe.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever wear anything but Ultras ever again, though. Ever. Mm-hmm. Especially after training. When I get done with training, I don't put Birkenstocks on them. I put the Ultras.
Oh, wow.
Same with Catherine. So two back surgeries. She was going with the Nikes, like the really high-end Vapors that were like $400 a piece because they were relieving her back. We got her off those and on Ultras, and her back's feeling better.
Nice.
Who knew, right? So
she's starting to improve.
So the feet, because of her feet are finally, like, after all those years, you know, and it's like, man. So if you guys get a chance to go to a running store and try a pair of Ultras on, don't buy them. Like, don't take my word for it. So you try them on. Try them on, man. They're amazing. Amazing shoes. So that's
get a gait analysis done if you can. You know, some of those running shoe stores have a gait analysis program that can just watch you run.
Yeah, San Diego, Runner's World is one of the best running stores in the world. It's right over by REI, off of the 5th, I think the 18 or something over. Anyway, but that's where I've done it, a few other places, but they're all over San Diego anyway, running gait analysis. So, but that's kind of like, I think that that's my advice, guys. Some things like I'm going to mention real quick that I think are maybe, I know Stu mentioned, like the knees over toes. We got the Foot Collective. We have a guy named David Weck, or the Weck Method. Joel Smith is a guy. So my point, these are a lot of names and guys that have some methodology really focused on bringing value to the feet. And the ultimately, a lot of us like want to gravitate towards a single method. And let me encourage you to don't. Like,
yeah,
go to the mall, guys. Like,
diversify. Because
the reason why is because two reasons. You might find somebody that just teaches a little bit better for what you hear, which is great for methodology. And the other side is like, let's say like a David Weck, him as an athlete probably was predisposed to certain movement things that I may not have had, but somebody else may have. And so his coaching methodology really suits that way of development. Sure. And so that's why it's really good to like open your ears to all these methodologies and go, don't go, which one's for me? Go, what can I pull from these really smart guys that have already made the mistakes? So that's my thoughts on that. So definitely like take a look at how people are taking care of their feet and then look at somebody else and look at somebody else and just keep going down that rabbit hole. I think you'll find more value.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's move up a little bit and talk about the ankle. I have been on top of ankle mobility hard for the last 6 months. And the main reason was I noticed people's inability to fin because of ankle mobility. They just weren't able to, you know, actually produce enough force from the hips that allowed the fin to flex. You know, they were always, they were still at this angle versus
toe up position. Yeah.
Having a ballerina type ankle flex or point. And it also prevented them from doing a good breaststroke kick, which also prevented them from doing an egg beater tread. Yeah,
you need a lot of ankle extension. So toe pointed, right? You need to be able to be strong in plantar flexion. So toe down, toe extended, toe away, right? That is where you produce force through the hamstring and into the glute. So if we can't get to fully dorsiflex, our glutes and hamstring actually, they don't contract at the rate that they can if the foot is stable, right? So ankle mobility also comes into ankle stability. Like with ankle mobility, you get really safe, stiff ankles, right? It's a weird thing that we think that if I increase my ankle mobility and strength, I'm going to get weak ankles. No, like it is completely the opposite. So, and that's what you get. That's why doing good finning will really help eliminate shin splints in conjunction with rucking. Because with rucking, you get the opposite. You get plantar flexed when we land. So we get the other extreme of force management and production. So finning and rucking are extremely complementary for running, swimming, and rucking.
No, that's a really good point. I appreciate that. Yeah, that makes so much sense. I mean,
it's the opposite. So like they are so complementary. When someone needs to run better, what we prescribe is finning with rucking in conjunction with the running. And that is how we create our range of effort, is because where our question is always, how does your ankles feel after the ruck? Because if the ankles are tight, we put them in a stretching.
Yeah.
Before we get them running again. And it's always addressing the issue before we add more components.
Yeah, absolutely. Something I was doing too, I was having this special treading class, you know, at the Naval Academy for some of the guys that needed help prior to like a recon screener that they were getting ready for. And I noticed when I was teaching variety of kicks for treading, whether it was scissor kick or trying to do an egg beater, it was purely hips, knees, and ankles preventing them from being able to do an egg beater kick. They could understand what I was saying, but they couldn't get into that egg beater kick, which is really just an alternating breaststroke kick.
You bet. Yeah.
So what we did is we did a little drill for 3 weeks, and we did it three times a week for 30 minutes. And all we did was we tread for 5 minutes. We stretched hip, knees, and ankles for 5 minutes. And we did that for three rotations for a total of 30 minutes. And in end of 3 weeks, everybody could do the egg beater. Not because I really taught them egg beater. It's because I got them, their hips more mobile and their ankles more mobile to actually produce a downward force with their kick versus thinking the egg beater's spinning this way. You're actually spinning this way, right?
Yep. You're pushing down. You guys understand that this thing, like what he's talking about, guys, this, what to achieve this is experiential, right? Like we know, like if someone goes, you need ankle mobility. What is the only way to get it is you have to experience the practice to achieve it, right? You have you can't will yourself to mobility, right?
No.
You cannot even effort yourself to mobility, like as an acute method. You can effort yourself collectively over time with experiencing the try, the process, right? The most unsexy part of this. So that's the one of the, like, actually, I it's really cool when you find people, you see the light bulb turn on when they get it, when they go, oh, it is the process. Like, I got this. And you see it, these guys right away, they're like, well, there's a real fear base because it does take real commitment in the experience to gain it. Like, you can't will it, guys. And that's what we're trying to say is, like, when it comes to things that are chronic, we can't will ourselves away from shin splints. The only way to get through the shin splints is to experience how to get through it, right? Like someone gets shin splints, how they get rid of it. They found a way, they worked on a way that allowed them to navigate the discomfort that created adaptation, not further stress and compensation. And it takes patience, right? Yes. And so that's where we as coaches are actually should, Stu most certainly, me, I'm getting better at it, is offering you guys the opportunity to experience it rather than like, don't be a pussy. That works sometimes. But what it really takes is you going, man, okay, guys, you're right. I just got to go do it. And I got to go practice it. And it's not going to be super fun at first. It's going to be even a little bit demoralizing because I really want this thing. You got to go through the experience.
Well, I will tell you this. I see a lot of the light bulb going off when they feel it, experience it. But me as a coach, the light bulb went off when I was watching them tread underwater. And I'm like, they just can't physically do it.
Mechanically, right? Like that's what an interesting thing is, like the will is there. So it's like you take this amazing population that has will and you give them through experience that the no.
Yeah.
And then you see it as a coach. Yeah.
And I was like, I got to teach mobility. I can't teach treading right now. I need to teach mobility.
Yeah. We got to give these guys the ankles to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was that was a light bulb for me as a coach. Personally, I've been trying to spread that word, significantly. Right. And I found it to be very helpful, not only for treading, but for other elements that they're doing. Their lifts are cleaner. The running is a little more efficient. You know, it cascades into different activities too. So,
and why, and the guys, like, think about like the perfect example of like Stu, his athletes, the academy, right? What percentage of the day do those guys get to spend in really good footwear? Yeah. I'm not saying like the Naval Academy is bad footwear. I'm saying like the environment, guys. These guys are wearing uniforms that so they're spending just like people that work all day in their steel-toed boots or their dress shoes because they're in a cubicle. And then they spend 8 hours and they head to the gym. Well, their body position, their muscle skeletal position is a direct result of what they've been wearing and doing. So here it is, guys. Get you guys. Sometimes that's why they're so important in the warm-up for these sort of things, because the foot tightness, the ankle tightness from being in dress shoes and combat boots all day, you can really get the feet back to a better neutral position just in a few minutes. We don't need to stretch for forever. Let's get those shoes off. Let's get our workout clothes on. Let's get those feet opened up and the ankles moving. And let's go exercise.
Yeah. You know, something I've noticed too, that if for some reason I forget to roll my feet prior to some stretching, you know, I notice that my lower back is a little stiffer. My hamstrings are a little stiffer. And then, you know, and then compared to a day where I'm like, you know, get my feet first and just roll everything on my feet. And then I go into, you know, working my way up my body. I'm like, wow, I get, you know, put my feet, you know, my hands flat on the ground, you know, bending over, knees straight, you know, just because I warmed up my feet first.
Yeah. You told the bot you cared. This is self-care, guys. This is compassion. This is a real new thing to me, right? Is what, how about we take this perspective, guys, because we know you guys, most of you are really driven and want this. So because we know that that desire to do what you want to do is in truth, it's real. Instead of going into the weight room going like, how can I really challenge myself today and be a big bad this, go, okay, do the same thing, bro. How can I prepare myself the best so that I can really challenge myself that day? Right. And it's exactly what Stu is saying. You just give your body just a minute. In the same way, it's like, I'm going to go put my body armor on. I'm going to check, make sure everything is where it needs to be. My batteries are charged. Everything's good before I get off that helo and I need to go to work. Well, before you have achieved that part of going to work as a SEAL or special forces guy, well, what is your work? Your work is to show up right now. Do the unsexy things, take care of yourself, get yourself warmed up and go do the work. Now create that habit, right? And then now you'll go into the teams with this, you're going to take care of yourself, not in a selfish way, right? Because you definitely want to take care of team gear before you take care of yourself gear. But emotionally, every single day that you go to the gym or go to the pool or go to the track, if you do give yourself a few minutes of care, that's a really good habit to have.
All right, Jeff, final place of the body that we're going to talk about today. Let's talk a little bit about the knee, because the knee is, as you work your way up, that is a very common joint that I have seen, you know, with a variety of knee injuries, from the IT band that floats past the knee. You tend to feel it, even though it connects way up here in the hip. You know, it goes all the way down to below the knee. You tend to feel it more in the knee than anywhere else. You got the patellofemoral syndrome. That's kind of the inside of the runner's knee. And then you got patellotendinitis, which is the big tendon right there that, you know, right there below your kneecap. All of those get sensitive, you know, when exposed to a variety of things, whether it's high repetition calisthenics like squats and lunges, or it's, you know, high mileage type running, sometimes sprinting, you know, can add that extra force to it that makes it a little bit tender. What are some of your recommendations for either dealing with that and preventing it altogether?
Yeah, no, you know, it's a good order we went into, because typically what I've seen is if someone is having some knee discomfort, we'll say, right, and we look at them, we begin to assess our work. And typically speaking, the knee discomfort is a result typically of the ankle, probably, right?
Or the foot. Too.
That's why we did the foot and ankle, because you kind of really can't separate the two of them in its natural working, like the ankle and knee, or I'm sorry, ankle and the foot, when they're both healthy, they're not really a limiting factor for one or the other. But you guys got to realize, like think about it. I always use this analogy for like a rifle. If I had a rifle in a vise and I was shooting a target at 100 meters away, but my sight was off just a little bit at 100 meters, it's going to be exponential. The same thing is for the knee. If your ankle is a little bit manipulated in its position, I'm sorry, your foot is, well, down upstream further away is the ankle, to be even further out of position. And then you keep going upstream towards the knee. It's the knee is going to be even further out of position because of probably the foot. So,
and then your hips are all jacked up.
And then we go to hips, and then really, then we're asking like, okay, if I, like today, our neighbor came in, has a lot of shoulder issues, right? He's having shoulder and lat issues. Well, we look at the feet. That's what's going on, right? It's worked its way all the way to the shoulder. So we go, okay, that was the point where I started, how important the feet are. Now, when it comes to the knee itself, really the big thing that comes down to is the knee is a direct result in terms of movement pattern of where the foot and ankle is, right? You could say hip, but really it's the foot.
Oh, sure.
So what I say to people is, like, we talk about, hey, we need to improve the squat. I want you guys to think outside of the barbell back squat. That's what we're really, people think about when we say squat. But that's a really difficult exercise to fix your squat in, because it's right. So where do we go? I like to go to single leg squatting movements, like a rear elevated or just a split squat. And then I'm going to squat one side. I'm going to switch my feet and I'm going to make a comparison, because that's really what you need to be doing. Because if you have a bad ankle or a tight ankle on one side, it's probably likely that the other one isn't as. So it's a nice comparison, right? And that's what we're doing. We're not saying, well, yeah, of course this one's better. No, no, no. When you're moving, like if you're in a split squat position and I'm descending, I am looking to see where, as I descend, what body is getting, what muscle skeletal position is not doing what I want it to do. Like, is the knee diving in? Am I trying to brace and catch myself? It is your movement in which you assess, but it's really hard to assess bilateral, right? When so go into a single leg position and make a comparison. And then from that point on, you'll probably see that your knee wonkiness is probably because of your ankle and foot. And then that starts you. That's why we say start with the ankle and feet and work your way up. Because if you have knee issues, but you don't have, you in your mind, you're like, I don't have ankle and foot issues. Yes, you do. You cannot have a knee out of position without having the foot and ankle out of position. It's not possible. Okay. Even in especially in a machine like a leg press, the leg press won't fix it, guys. Mm-mm. The leg press will just create a stationary lever angle that should allow you to see it easier and fix it easier. That's why we have fixed machines. The fixed machines are to fix our gait, fix yes. our movement pattern, not get in the machine and create a greater compensation. Let the machines help you move better, guys.
That's a good point.
Idea too.
That's a good point. Cause I was, probably in the last, I don't know, sometimes my years go by too fast, 5 or maybe even 10 years now. Just the reading of the typical leg extension, how that has been very helpful for people with, patella tendonitis and runner's knee.
Yeah.
And you got to do it a special way. You got to go moderately heavy and you go like a 10-second rep. So 5 seconds up, 5 seconds down. So really a super slow rep.
Yep.
Moderately heavy, to help, alleviate that patella tendonitis, but also post patella surgeries. I mean, it can go even better. Yeah.
Cause if you're in a leg extension, guys, here's the red flag. If you're doing a leg extension and you get to extension and your toes dip in or they dip out, that's what you're getting. So when we get to full extension, that's the same as getting the full extension out the back. So if I'm getting rotated feet internally on a machine, I know I'm getting internal rotation out the backside. So that's why we use machines. And that's why he's saying you go slow, because when you're going slow enough under tension with this additional weight, you reteach the body's locomotion because you can do it slow enough. With resistance, it's just an exchange of mass and velocity. That's it, or acceleration, really. And that is how you manage movement practices, is don't go faster than you can accommodate with resistance. When you're able to manage your movement with additional resistance. You train the body at slow rates that will then propel itself at a high velocity without getting out of movement pattern. Because you use the mass. That's why we use rucking. We're exchanging the mass for velocity just a little bit. We're not putting a 100-pound ruck on your back. You're putting 20 pounds, right? So we offset acceleration and mass to recondition the nervous system at the same force component. It's the same F. It's the same mathematical outreach as long as we don't put too much weight on. And that is why resistance training can condition movement patterns under low velocity. That's why it works. That's why we barbell. That's why Boyd Epley was hired by Nebraska in 1984 to teach barbell back squatting to minimize linear sprint training injuries. That's why we squat. It's to improve hamstring development, right? And so that's why we have a hack squat, because for knee issues. When we have knee issues, the first thing we do is we go to hack squat to see if the knee issue shows up. If it does, then we put them in the belt squat. If it shows up in the belt squat, then we put them in the extension, just like you mentioned. Yeah. It's taking away stressors and finding the right stressor that creates adaptation. And sometimes we got to go all the way down to an isolating leg extension. We don't know, right? It's still showing up. Well, let's go to a lesser stress, more stationary movement, see if it shows up. Oh, it didn't. Awesome. So let's work at that. And let's say you work at that for a couple of days, it doesn't show up. Then we go to more stressful hack squat and goes, hey, it didn't show up. Awesome. Now we have another exercise. Do that for a week or two, and then we throw you under the barbell. All that practice, just like you talked about the egg beater. All those good quality practice of reps in here will eliminate running discomfort. If it's done properly, you bet it can help.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another thing I'm finding too is, you know, let's say they're not quite ready to run yet, but they've kind of taken away some of the issues, the pain and maybe some of the mobility issues they were having. And then we start doing lunging. And lunging has been a very good tool to make that transition. Like, I can't run yet because the impact hurts my shins, but I can definitely lunge. And then whenever they come back into this ability to maybe the shins are a little more durable, you know, they find that they have the leg stamina to be able to run. And, you know, they really haven't lost a whole lot from that prior injury, even though they weren't really running that much. Maybe they were keeping up their cardio with some biking or elliptical or something like that, swimming, rucking. But you know, sometimes
I couldn't agree with you more. I totally agree, Stu. I think that walking lunges, not heavy, right? Yep. A good barbell walking lunges are, you know, it's like a, you know, basically farmer's walk grip walking lunges, you know. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but that is how I prepared for all my deployments. I did barbell walking lunges around the team. Like that's nice. SEAL team 5 and 7. I would lunge the entire way around that building with 135 pounds.
Nice.
That's too big. Man, like keep in mind, guys, like, would I recommend you lunging around SEAL team 5 and 7 with 135 pounds pre-deployment? No, no. If I were to do it all over again, I would have gone to probably like 75 pounds, 65 pounds, and done more volume, more distance. That for me are like, get the weight away, get the weight completely away, and just walking lunge on a beach or somewhere for a couple hundred meters at a time. It really is a fantastic human movement. It really is.
It's a useful tool too. I mean, you're going to see lunging at buds as well, you know, especially with a log, you know, as a boat crew, you're going to lunge a lot. And, in fact, I will put it this way. You will do more lunges than pull-ups in your first 4 weeks of buds. Everybody does hundreds of pull-ups, but they don't do hundreds of lunges.
No. Yeah. That was like the grinder PT stuff was never never really much of a surprise in physical effort. But yeah, like all the stuff on the beach is always, I thought was always way worse.
Yeah.
All way worse. Yeah. So, but I think that, you know, like, I'm just curious about this topic because, like I mentioned, when you talk this, there seems to be some focus on its value of foot and ankle care. So I think in the next year or two, there'll be more things available to us to provide more value in this avenue, I believe. So just keep your eyes open, guys. I think there's some pretty smart people out there coming up with some real valuable stuff now.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I'll put those links to who you mentioned in the description of this video too, if you're interested in, you know, some of those methodologies that are just really smart. You know,
take a look at them, guys, and you'll find that you probably don't need to spend hours listening to these guys. You'll lock on to what their kind of principles are. And I want you, when you hear what their principles are, I just want you to see how they move and go, what does that look like? Like, what in the tactical space does that look like? And how is that? So start putting yourself kind of in their shoes and you'll start seeing, I think, some of the relevance, especially for you guys that are obviously rucking and running. So,
oh yeah. You'll see. And when you see the knees over toes guy, you're going to realize how important mobile and flexible hips, knees, and ankles are. Yeah. Just by any one of his movements are just really impressive. You know, it gives me a personal challenge to improve hip, knee, and ankle mobility as well.
Because that's, guys, like that's the reality of what we're really actually doing. You know, is I think if you've coached long enough, this is my where I'm coming to as a professional now is like people ask a lot of times what my goals are. My goals are very, very different than the people that we train. Hopefully that's understandable, sure. Right? My goal is to be as healthy as an example as I can be in my latter years. And how do I do that? Well, I can maintain an overall good amount of strength because I've achieved it. The best way for me to hold on to that strength, to hold on to my athleticism, to hold on to all these things that gives me value as a coach, we'll say, the best way to do that is to continue to focus on my mobility, to continue to focus on, not just to use that buzzword, what I mean by mobility, all of my movement patterns that are associated to weight training and sport, I need to practice them with accuracy first. That's the rest of my life, is it? Because now I'm always going to be strong relative. I'm always going to be, because the focus is health and wellness and better movement, and now it's definitely have served me. And so that's like, ultimately, we know you guys are going to push hard to your goal. What we're hoping probably is that at some point in your career, you realize like what we're saying, there's going to be a point in time where you're ready to hear it. So when you're young and crazy and like we were like lunging around the teams, you're probably not listening to us, but in the future, we hope that you do.
Well, I will tell you this. You know, the key to optimal performance is really the same as the keys to longevity.
Yes.
Right? Because the key to optimal performance is the mastery of recovery.
Yes.
Right? It really is the mastery of recovery. Whatever you put onto your body, you have to be able to recover from in order to perform better. Yes. You know, same way for longevity. My mastery of recovery looks a little bit different than it did 25 years ago, but at the same time, it's the same thing, right?
It really is.
I have to master my recovery just at a different level.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I'm not doing the same things I was doing 25 years ago, but you know, it's both of them are all about the recovery. And when we talk about recovery, it's sleep, nutrition, hydration, electrolytes. I guess you could call that nutrition in a way, but I like to differentiate the two because being a heat casualty is real if you're not paying attention. And then, you know, your flexibility, mobility are all part of that journey.
Because your strength, because we look at like, you know, these really, really strong men and women. Well, really, the truth is those really, really strong men and women also in the context of their sport have really good mobility, right? Oh, like yeah. That's like what it's actually a bit of a misnomer, the amount of mobility and flexibility that goes into someone that could squat 1,000 pounds. Like, I mean, if you look at Audrey Milinichev, the best squatter in the world, ask to grab, I mean, like beautiful. Like, you look at that and go, well, what do we take away from that? Well, the people that can produce the most force, the people that can produce the highest velocity, and the people that can produce the most cumulative work all have exceptional mobility and flexibility and stability through their range of strength. Like, we can't just miss out on the opportunity to develop that which is the absolute root, and that's your flexibility, mobility, longevity. That's it. That's your link to strength. That's your link to power. That's your link to recovering from it. So, because that's how you talk to your nervous system.
Yep.
So, anyways, guys, hopefully that was helpful. Kind of revisit foot, ankle, and knee stuff, but
no, I think that was a good update because
yeah, I think so.
With this, I mean, you and I are constantly learning. Two, learning, evolving, sharing, yeah. Because if you're not, you're done,
You will not be relevant in this space. You will not be. And that's like a weird thing. It's like, you're not going to be relevant very long if you don't keep up with the truth.
Nope.
That's the reality. It's like, I hear so many people like trying to sell a process, and I'm like, but you don't have any experience. Like, where's the experience, So. Like, this, just let this be come from experience, because we're trying to offer you, like, don't make the same mistakes, honestly. So,
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, everybody, check out Jeff's site over there,
PerformanceFirstUS.com.
PerformanceFirstUS.com. He's over there, Jeff CSCS over on Instagram, Stu Smith Fitness over here, Stu Smith 50 on Instagram. Even have a TikTok now, Jeff. Nothing but CSS critiques.
Just keep it simple like that, right?
Yeah, it's a TikTok. It's a really good tool for voiceover critiques. So people send me videos, I just do voiceover critiques on TikTok, and it's nothing works. But CSS critiques. And
nice.
Got over 100 of them on there, so it's nice. Fun. All right, folks. Until next time, Jeff. Once again, thanks for your time. This was really good. You're always so valuable with your information. So thank you.
My pleasure, Stu, truly. Yeah, easy day, man. Happy to do it for you.
All right. And guys, till next time, we will see you later. Have a good one.